This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will further the United States' partnership with the government and the people of Africa.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching, who is traveling with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson as he heads to Africa today for a series of meetings in five countries. Details coming up.
Also, Sierra Leoneans go to the polls tomorrow. 16 candidates are vying to replace outgoing President Ernest Bai Koroma. And Zimbabwe today joins the list of countries banning imports of processed meat from South Africa.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Sierra Leoneans go to the polls tomorrow. 16 candidates are vying to replace outgoing President Ernest Bai Koroma of the All People's Congress Party. For much of the country's electoral history, it's alternated power with the Sierra Leone People's Party. This year, several other parties are taking part, including the National Grand Coalition and Coalition for Change Party. VOA's Peter Cloti is in the capital, Freetown. He spoke with reporter William Eagle about preparations for the polls and the atmosphere in the city.
The Sierra Leonean police have agreed with registered political parties and stakeholders to restrict the movement of too many vehicles on 7th March 2018, that is on Wednesday, election day, from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. They said there was need for no vehicle that is unaccredited by the National Electoral Commission to be allowed to ply on polling day due to security reasons. And there were only a few exceptions. Those vehicles belonging to political parties without party colors and emblems, vehicles belonging to elections management bodies, vehicles belonging to international local observers accredited by the Electoral Commission, those belonging to recognized media houses such as VOA and civil society organizations, those from the essential service institutions of Sierra Leone, vehicles belonging to diplomatic missions and hired additional commercial buses. This was an order from the Sierra Leone police. This, they said, is as a result of preventing possible violence during the elections.
Peter, what is the mood on the streets or even in the media and people you've spoken to? Is there anticipation and excitement, or is there a bit of apathy or cynicism?
People are in an expected mood. However, some people have expressed concern about possible violence. Others are saying they wouldn't even want to vote at all. Some that I spoke with said they would be buying foodstuff in case something were to happen on election day or afterwards. So it's a mixed bag of things. However, the Electoral Commission officials have assured the public that they have implemented policies to ensure the elections are free and fair. Security agencies have also expressed confidence that they have implemented measures to ensure that people are protected while they go to the polls. They would not allow any voter intimidation that could cause any voter apathy. People are traveling to their various provinces to go and vote there because in Sierra Leone, where you register is where you vote. They have not put in a system where you can transfer your vote. Let's say you register in one province and vote in another. So where you register to vote is where you strictly have to go and cast your ballot on Wednesday.
Peter, you spoke to the election board chairman recently. Is he pretty confident that they can meet any challenges that could present themselves on election day or just after?
The chairman of the Sierra Leone National Electoral Commission, Mohamed Infa Ali Conte, told me that people who are expressing doubt about the effectiveness of the Electoral Commission to administer a credible election should be assured that his organization will do everything in its power to ensure that the elections are transparent and credible. This, he said, is as a result of the ongoing engagement and dialogue with all political stakeholders, including political parties and civil society groups, observers and all. And whenever they bring up issues, he said, they promptly address them in anticipation of the election. Now, truth be told, some of these political leaders that I spoke with, talking about Mada Bio of the SLPP, the Sierra Leone People's Party, the biggest opposition party in the country, he said he is comfortable so far that over 90% of the concerns his party raised have been addressed by the Electoral Commission, and that the Electoral Commission has been responsive to their concerns. Same thing with the leader or presidential candidate of the National Grand Coalition. We're talking about Dr. Yom Keller, who also said that the Electoral Commission has been responsive. He, however, expressed concern that some of his supporters are being attacked by supporters of the ruling APC or the All Progressive Congress. So the Electoral Commission perspective, they seem to have been really good at engaging the political parties and other stakeholders to address their concerns before Wednesday's election bill.
That was VOA's Peter Cloti from Freetown, Sierra Leone, where elections will be held tomorrow. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Africa today for meetings in Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. In a major policy speech a few hours before his departure, Tillerson said, as an oil company executive, he had spent a lot of time in Africa and saw its economic potential and a growing role for Africa in responding to global challenges. He also said he intends to work on building on a strong foundation of U.S.-Africa relations. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching is traveling with Tillerson. She spoke with our colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the secretary's trip.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will further the United States' partnerships with the government and the people of Africa. In particular, he plans to discuss ways that the U.S. can work with our partners to counter terrorism, advance peace and security, promote good governance, and spur mutually beneficial trade and investment.
What are the economic priorities for the United States in Africa?
One of the most important priorities is getting African nations off debt. According to a U.S. senior official, one of the countries that are great partners of the United States in fighting extreme terrorism, but they are in deep trouble because they are so deep in debt. So that really prevents them to do more to work with the United States to fight terrorism. So the United States is encouraging those countries to get off debt by encouraging a homegrown entrepreneur's self-sufficient economic growth to expand middle class and to achieve that. Those countries should fight corruption and continue its economic reforms. Those can help them get off debt.
Now, are there any strains in the U.S. relationship with African nations?
Yes. For example, human rights and good governance. For example, U.S. has made it very clear to governments in Ethiopia and Kenya that they should address a demand for greater diversity in the presidential cabinet. The U.S. is also calling countries such as Nigeria to protect civilians against Boko Haram. U.S. is also pressing Ethiopia to allow freedom of expression, institute fair trials, and hold arbitrary arrests and detentions. We understand 20 countries in Africa are holding national elections in 2018. In Washington's vision, a good, inclusive, genuine political process would include building institutions, strengthening institutions, and also have peaceful transitions and hold government accountable to.
That was our State Department correspondent Nike Ching speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson.
This week's cabinet reshuffle in Cameroon appears unlikely to herald change in the government's approach to the crisis in the Anglophone regions. The crisis began nearly a year and a half ago and has grown more violent. Stabilizing the Anglophone regions is seen as a priority ahead of nationwide elections later this year. Moki Edwin-Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
A dozen vehicles transporting at least 220 people from Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region arrived in the French-speaking town of Bouda Tuesday morning. Among them is Donatien Fotsou, a 55-year-old businessman. He says he, his wife and four children fled from the town of Bamenda after three consecutive days of heavy gunfire between the military and armed separatists.
The army problem caused all that problem. They just do as they like. You just sleep.
He says Cameroon military has been invading their neighborhoods, shooting indiscriminately and arresting and torturing citizens. He says the torture and the killing inflicted on them has made the people so frightened that when they see a military vehicle, they start escaping. Christopher Maingong, a 27-year-old farmer, says he left his village on the outskirts of Njinikom before the deadline because he had anticipated there would be bloody conflicts triggered by the heavy deployment of Cameroon's military to English-speaking towns and villages.
I was afraid. I did not know what was really the problem. Since we have military that they cannot communicate, the next day, you should tell us what's happening, the gunshot was this, was that. So even today, I'm afraid. I don't know what's going wrong.
The tensions began mounting when Cameroon announced that separatist leader Ayuk Tabe Julius and 36 of his supporters had been arrested in Nigeria and transferred to Cameroon. They have not been seen in public since then, fueling speculation that they may have been killed. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma said in a statement that all 37 are still alive, but the announcement did not calm their angry supporters. Cameroon says seven villages have been burned and at least 20 people, including soldiers and separatists, have been killed in the ongoing violence. The unrest in Cameroon began in November 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets, calling for reforms and greater autonomy. The situation degenerated with separatist calls for independence and the rise of an armed separatist movement, prompting a crackdown of the military. Moki, Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News, Bouda, Western Cameroon.
At least 15 people have died in clashes between nomadic herdsmen and farmers in Nigeria's Benue State. The violence Monday in the village of Omotu was the latest flare-up in the struggle for control of land and grazing rights. News reports say the attack came during a meeting between the two sides to ease tensions after the death of a Fulani herdsman a few days earlier. Police say some herdsmen went on a rampage during the meeting. Most of the dead and injured were women and children. There have been nearly daily clashes in central Nigeria between the two sides for months. President Muhammadu Buhari is to visit Benue State in the coming days as part of his tour of regions of the country hit by sectarian or ethnic violence.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hayes Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Sierra Leoneans go to the polls tomorrow. 16 candidates are vying to replace outgoing President Ernest Bai Koroma. And U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Africa today for meetings in Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Benin's President Boni Yayi met in Paris today with French President Emmanuel Macron as part of Macron's continued effort to return African artwork and artifacts to the African countries from which they were taken. President Macron last year said the effort would be a top priority on his agenda. He has since assigned two French officials with determining ways to return the looted artwork before the end of the year. In addition, President Yayi looks to develop further partnerships in France that will promote economic growth in Benin. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with me about the two presidents' meeting.
The key focus really has been for the Benin president to find a key or an open door or just a door that's slightly ajar that he can push open to get some sort of guarantee from the French president that Benin will get the looted art back to their country soon. That is the key aspect, if you like. People talk about whether these artifacts were lent, were borrowed, were stolen, but at the end of the day, everyone goes back to that remark that the French president, Emmanuel Macron, made in last November when he was in Ouagadougou, when he said this art has to be returned. So that was the key aspect of the visit. In return, the French president said, okay, he's going to really put this on the road now. He's put two officials in charge with getting, if you like, a register of all the art that's in question and finding a way that the laws can be changed so as this artwork can be returned.
On other issues, there were other financial items that were discussed between the two presidents. What were some of those?
Some of them really do go to the heart of the French president's agenda, which is education, and particularly education for girls. So he's put aside some money to go towards education and also for apprenticeships. The big money this time, though, has been that France will help finance a hospital in Benin. They're going to put some 175 million euros into one particular hospital. They're also going to put about 110 million euros for development to Cotonou and three other villages in Benin. Certainly, one other aspect really goes to the heart of what Emmanuel Macron is trying to do is invest in the tourism sector. And for that, France has also put aside some 43 million euros. And that will go towards, if you like, cleaning up some of the tourist areas in Benin so they can attract more tourism. Because that really goes to the heart of what Benin wants and what France wants. Benin is talking about inward investment. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, is saying, okay, if you want inward investment, we've got to make sure it's going to the right places and we're prepared to invest in infrastructure and for other projects that will bring in money rather than just putting money to something that's really just going to be used by a few people.
Do observers see this meeting as a success?
Absolutely, it's a success. And what we're really seeing is the French president, Emmanuel Macron, expanding his influence in Africa. We've seen just in the last 6 months a steady stream of African leaders, not just leaders from the Sahel, but also other countries in Anglophone Africa as well as Francophone Africa, either meeting with the French president or the French president going there. So it's a success because on this aspect, the president of Benin has turned the focus on the looted art and he's got guarantees of finance for specific projects in his own countries. And we're also seeing that for the time being, at least, the French president is putting his money where his mouth is and making it possible for more inward economic development in these countries.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
On the occasion of the recently marked World Hearing Day, the World Health Organization is warning 1 in 10 people globally, or more than 900 million, are at risk of disabling hearing loss by 2050 unless preventative action is taken now. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports 466 million people around the world currently suffer from disabling hearing loss. The annual cost to countries in direct health services and lost productivity resulting from this disability is estimated at $750 billion. Problems resulting from hearing loss are expected to rise because of a growing and aging population, a population that will reach 9 billion by 2050. Shelley Chada is a technical officer in WHO's Department of Prevention of Deafness and Hearing Loss. She says the rise in the aging population does not mean that an increase in hearing loss is inevitable. She says there are many factors besides aging that affect hearing.
These may be factors such as infectious diseases, which we may encounter in childhood, rubella, mumps, meningitis, or ear infections. There may be factors such as exposure to loud sounds, to loud music, or noise at workplace. Is that many of these causes are preventable, and by addressing them, we can reduce or minimize the risk of hearing loss.
WHO reports about 60% of hearing loss in children can be prevented. These include immunizing children against infectious diseases, screening and treating chronic ear infections, avoiding the use of drugs harmful to hearing, and controlling exposure to loud sounds and music. In cases where hearing loss is unavoidable, WHO says people can be helped through technologies such as hearing aids and surgically implanted electronic cochlear implants. It says these devices are of great benefit to the hard of hearing because they make it possible for them to better communicate and socialize with others. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The fate of hundreds of thousands of young illegal immigrants in the United States remains undecided today, a day after a deadline passed without any action by Congress or the White House. Those impacted by the stalemate rallied in Washington against the lack of progress in reversing President Trump's decision to end their protection from deportation by scrapping the Obama-era Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA. The White House is blaming Congress for not acting on the DACA issue, but Democrats blame Trump and the Republican leadership for failing to pass any immigration bills in the Senate and the Speaker of the House for not bringing the matter to the House floor.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, voters in Sierra Leone go to the polls on March 7th to elect a new president, parliament, and local councils. President Ernest Bai Koroma is stepping down after serving two terms. His presidency faced the Ebola outbreak and allegations of corruption. An in-depth discussion on the most pressing issues facing Sierra Leone on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.